This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is November 30th, 1981. The interview is taking place at the home of Otto Hallseth and is being conducted by Inger Carr. What is your full name, please? What is your name?
My name is Otto Hjalmar Hallseth.
Now you say Hallseth, and I say Hallseth. What is the difference?
My name was originally Hallseth, H-E-L-S-E-T-H, but my school teacher here in Tacoma asked me to change it to A and pronounce it Aw. Hallseth, and that has been my name for over 50 years.
Why did she do that?
Well, she told me the Yankee has a bad habit of abbreviating my name and it sounds bad in English. I knew what she meant and I obeyed.
Yes.
So on my citizen paper, the name is H-A-L, Hallseth.
When and where were you born?
I was born in Ørsta, Norway.
Ørsta.
Ørsta, Norway.
Will you spell Ørsta?
It's a letter Ø that you don't have in the English alphabet. And R-S-T-A. The reason I was born in Ørsta was because my hometown, which became my hometown just a few months later, was Ålesund, Norway. And this city burnt down in 1904. And I was 3 months on the way in my mother's womb and had to be born out of town. And it was Ørsta.
So the whole town burned down when she was expecting you.
Yes.
What was the cause of the fire? You know?
The cause of the fire, they believe it was deliberately put on. It was arson by some madman.
Was it just a small town? So it
it was a big town. It was 17,000 at that time, probably close to 17,000.
And the whole town went?
Whole town went.
Where in Norway is this?
Well, this was the biggest peacetime fire in Europe. And so much so that the Kaiser, the German Kaiser, the first one to reply, he sent two warships loaded with food and clothing to reach us. And in his memory, a big statue is erected in the park in Ålesund, which is there to this day.
Ålesund is real close to Ørsta then?
Yes, it's not too far apart.
What part of Norway is that?
It is north. It is between Bergen and Kristiansund. It's the first big city north of Bergen.
Mm-hmm. Did all the people get out of the fire?
Yes, they had to run out, save their lives. No time to take their belongings. Those that could, of course, would. And just leave town when the flames was... It was a stormy night. Started one section of town, was thrown clear over to the other section.
What month of the year was it?
It was in January 23.
Of what year?
1904.
And you were born when?
I was born in July 10.
July 10th, 1904.
Yeah, that's right.
Tell me about your parents. What were their names?
My father was a möbelsnicker or a furniture dealer, and he had a cabinet shop and had many people working for him. But he lost everything. And after the fire, when the town was rebuilt, he had to start from scratch again.
They did rebuild the town.
Yes.
The town's there today.
Oh, yes. And he raised 10 children, 5 girls and 5 boys.
What was his name? You didn't say his name.
Ole J. Helseth was his name. Snekkermester Ole J. Helseth Oleson.
You lived in town then?
I lived in town, yes.
Not on a farm?
Yes.
What was your mother's name?
My mother's name was Oline.
Oline what?
Ohm. W-A Ohm. W-A-M. Ohm.
Now, what part was she from?
She came from Ørsta, Norway. That's the closest to a little farm. You know.
Mm-hmm. What were her parents' names?
Her father's name was Knut Ohm, and her mother's name Anne Ohm, A-N-E, Anne Ohm.
Yeah. Were they farmers, you said?
Yes, they had a little farm, yes.
Mm-hmm. Just enough for themselves?
Yes, just for to keep the family with house and mm-hmm. home. Yeah.
Is that how he made his living, or did he do something else, you know? Do you remember them at all?
I remember them, but at that time they were old people.
Oh.
And I do not know if he went fishing or in the wintertime in the ocean, or if he only made his living right around the farm and woods, and I don't really know that.
Mm-hmm. That was your mother's parents. How about your father's parents?
My father's parents.
What were their names and what did they do?
That was also Helseth. Now I can't remember his first name. He lived in Romsdal, Norway. Frana, Romsdal, Norway. He died at the early age of 47. And the widow was left with my grandmother on my father's side was born in Malmedal, Romsdal, and she became the wife of my grandfather, which was born on Helseth Ifreno, Romsdal. They had my father's mother's name was Ingeborg, born Malmedal, and my grandfather, my father's father, was born Helseth. Now I can't remember his name.
Sorry.
He was born Helseth Ifreno. They had 6 children, 2 girls and 4 boys. My grandfather passed away at the age of 47, and the widow was left to bring up these children. Naturally, they had to go and shift for themselves in a very early age. Yes. Anders, which was the oldest, became inspector of schools in Oleson and held that position for many years. And Jens Helseth became a blacksmith and settled down in Kristiansund, Norway. Lars Helseth became a tinsmith and settled down in Minneapolis for a brief time, and then later went to the west coast of U.S.
So he was out here.
Well, he's dead now.
Uh-huh.
All these are dead now. Mm-hmm. And Ole, my father, he went to Kristiansund and learned the cabinet trade or furniture trade, and became a dealer in furniture and started a small factory making his own furnitures. Yeah? I can't hear you. Okay. I mentioned already here.
Tell me more about your parents. What your home was like? Did they rebuild then? They rebuilt their home in?
They rented, of course. They rented both house and factory after he got. When the fire was over and the city rebuilt enough for people to move in, my father moved in and started his little furniture factory, and then he imported finished furniture from Sweden and had a sale. And all his five sons had to go through the mill. That is, he taught all of us to make furnitures. And then after we left home and decided later on some other vocation, that was up to us. The five girls were, the oldest became a cashier in a bigger apartment store. Ingeborg. She later married Egil Eide, which was son of the noted Eide that toured up and down the coast of Norway in his own boat selling langurs to Vak. And they settled down in Oslo, where Egil became a teacher in language at the University of Oslo. But Ingeborg died quite early, I believe in 1934. So she's out. My sister Astrid became a telegraph operator and died at the age of 65. My sister Ananda became the wife of a Lutheran minister and also passed away at the age of 65. My brother Knut lived also to be 65.
What did he do?
He was a cabinet maker.
In Norway?
Yes. He was good at the trade, so when Oslofjord, the Norwegian flagship, advertised for a, what they call them on the ship?
Anyway, he worked in the Oslofjord.
Yeah.
tell me about the rest of your brothers, what they did, what their names were.
All around handymen were tools. He was selected from a large group of applicants, and he was with Oslofjord until it sank during World War II. Yes, number two brothers is Otto Halseth, which is here in Tacoma now, speaking in this.
That's you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My older brother that I just mentioned received a ticket from one of my uncles here on the West Coast, and he was going to emigrate to America. But when he finally got his visa, he also got a call for military training in Norway. He handed me the ticket and said, "I can't go. If you want to go, here is the ticket." So I came over to US and on the West Coast in 1921 in my brother's stead. And I have now been here 60 years this month, with the exception of 3 years spent up in Canada and 3 years back in Norway after World War II.
Tell me about the rest of your brothers first before we go into your coming over here.
Then my brother Arnold, he became a craftsman in Ålesund, and he taught manual training in the school there and had his own little business, furniture business. Then my brother Jens became a businessman in Ålesund and had a large clothing store, and later he purchased another one. He had two clothing stores in Ålesund. He passed away at the age of 60. His son now is running that business. My brother Olaf, which is the youngest, took business college training and was hired by Norsk Brensel Olje Company, or British Petroleum, and has been in that business for his lifetime. He is now retired in Trondheim, Norway.
Tell me about all your sisters. I thought you told me. Right.
Now, my youngest sister, named Ruth, became a nurse and worked in hospitals for her lifetime and is now retired and live in Ålesund. The fifth sister I never saw because she drowned at the age of 2.5 in Ørsta at the time I was born, which also was after the fire in Ålesund.
How'd that happen?
She went down to the river, which was swollen because of much rain, with her little baby buggy, and there was a little wash house that obscured the vision from the house. And nobody was aware that she had gone down there in the back of the house, fallen into the river, and it was 2 hours later before they discovered she was missing. And then, of course, she was dead. So her name was Ananda. So this wife of the Lutheran minister took her name when she was born. Her name was Ananda.
I see.
Ananda. Nielsen's name.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe your childhood home?
My first recollection of my childhood home was right below the then hospital, biggest hospital in Ålesund. And it was at that time considered a little outskirt of time, town. So I had some meadows to run around in, and I enjoyed that. But at the age of 3, we had to leave that, and we moved further into town in a 6-story building. We were living on the 4th story. There was no elevators there, of course, so we were running up and down the stairs, and we liked it, as young people, and got our training. We were very near the school ground, and the school, what do you call the plane up there?
School yard?
Yeah, the school yard where all the games were played, and there was also a football field or a soccer field so nearby us that we were so centrally located to all what you call sport. And us 5 boys, we all enjoyed it. We enjoyed it so much that our father had to spend overtime at his shop to mend our shoes because we were all soccer players. But leaving at the age of 17,
well, did you stay in Ålesund all the time that you were there?
Yes.
Oh, you didn't move? I thought you said you moved back to Ørsta.
No. Just went there for vacation.
As
soon as the fire was over and they rebuilt the town, we were moved back and my father started his business. So we grew
up.
You did
move back to Ørsta?
No.
Oh.
We moved back from Ørsta too. As soon as they rebuilt the town,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We moved back to the town and stayed there ever since. Being that my...
To what town?
To Ålesund.
Oh, to Ålesund.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that Ørsta...
Ørsta is a...
Burned down.
It's a small... No, Ørsta didn't burn down.
Ålesund burned down.
My mother happened to come from Ørsta and my father from Romsdal, one north and one south. So the closest was the south. So we went to Ørsta because that was closest. I was baptized in that Ørsta church there.
Were you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you... I mean, if that was none, I'll tell you something. Have you covered all the children?
Yes. Now, you had your school real close there then. So how many years did you go to school?
I went only to grade school in the old country, finished that, and was confirmed at the age of 14 and a half.
I see.
That is the 7th grades that we call the grade school. I did not go on to Latin school, which was the next step. My brother Arnold went to Latin school where he took up French and German languages beside other things. But I started in to work in an office with hardly any knowledge and had planned to go to business college. But I progressed and they had insurance company. I learned how to use the typewriter and I wrote policies. And then I went around town and collected all the bills for the telephone, which was a part of this business, and the fire insurance.
How old were you then when you got that job?
Well, just out of school, 14 and a half. Younger than that, I started in to deliver papers And one of my first papers, when I sold the extras, my pockets were loaded with copper money, because it was extras telling the story about the sinking of the Titanic. And everybody wanted to know and see the picture of it in the paper, and I was so loaded down with money that time that I recall that. I was 8 years old at the time. Mm-hmm. And I had the paper out for some time, but that was only beside school time. I was still going to school, of course.
And you went to school every day there?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, all about, I think it was half a day Saturday.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How about Christmas in Norway, in your home?
Well, Christmas in our home, of course, was a big deal because we were so many of us. And everybody bought a present to all the rest of us.
You got quite a few then.
Yes, we were nine children. The one died quite early. We were nine children at that time. And because the last one before I left was Olaf the baby. And we had a big tree in the middle of a big front room, and we dressed it up. Mother dressed it up, and all the girls was making all kinds of tinsels and stuff to put in the tree. And we had bakings, character of all kinds hanging down. Oh, it was quite a show. And then we had real lights, that is,
candles,
yeah, real candles, candle lights, and they were fastened to the branches by a tin clamp, but we all had to watch them as they were burning down, so nothing will catch on fire. And fortunately, in our home, that never happened, that fire burnt down any tree.
Did you have the presents Christmas Eve? Did you open the presents?
Yes. Christmas Eve, of course, we had the customary rice pudding in the evening, and then we had ribs of swine, swine ribs. Huh?
For dinner.
Yes, for dinner. And after a good meal, then all those packages around the foot of the tree was opened by one chosen member of the family. And as the names was called, we went and received what was given to us. And of course, that's a great time in anybody's life. We didn't know at that time it was more blessed to give than to receive. Learned that later.
And then Christmas morning, did you go to church?
Christmas morning, we had what we call julotta. It was a custom to get up 4 o'clock in the morning and go out and go to the church and go through that program that they had that early hour in the morning. Then when you got home, we were just wondering or planning who we should go to, because we had so many invitations. And sometimes that'll happen, that'll keep on up till 2 weeks after Christmas, to going around in parties to friends and relatives and eat all the goodies that they have prepared weeks ahead of time. And as a newspaper boy at that time, I remember how many apples I got. It was not Norwegian apples, they were American apples. Norwegian apples was too cheap for anybody to give away in a time like, in a season like that. So I was very fortunate. I got many American grown apples, which was, of course, the best anybody could give in those days to a paper boy.
Was church really important in your family?
Yes. My parents were both Christians, and they encouraged us and brought us along when we didn't have much of a will of our own to exercise. They made us go along. We had what they called the Bedehus, which was operated by the what is called the Inner Mission in the old country, which was a branch of the church, but more independent, where you heard more the plain gospel without all the rituals and what do you call the other thing?
Liturgy.
Yeah, the liturgy that is exercised in the big main city church. And we went often there because our parents felt more home there than any other place. And we all knew what it was to live in a Christian home among our children. Not only that, but we had 4 hours of religion in our common grade schools. We had to learn Bible history. We had to memorize many of the songs, which we call psalms, not the psalms of the Bible, but written songs from the Psalm book in grade school. And most of the teachers opened with prayers and had a personal experience with the Lord. So we are very thankful later in life that we were brought up in such a place, in such a country, where that was possible. It marked all of us. If all of us didn't become personal Christians, we all knew the way and had our choice.
If your parents were such strong Christians, did they believe in the trolls and the unionism?
No. No, the old... my people, of course, were personal Christians, so much so they didn't believe in Valhalla and Thor and the gods of old the old legends, mm-hmm. Nor the trolls that lived in the mountains, nor the Ulinus that was moving around out in the barn and that we had to go and feed at Christmas Eve. Those things we only saw pictures of and publications about in magazines, but that wasn't a part of our church life.
Did your mother or your father teach you at home too, or was it mostly in church? And confirmation instruction, of course, you had, didn't you?
Well, we had to go and read with the preacher, as we say, and we had to learn before we got confirmed. And we had our catechism, and we had to study that, learn that. So all of those things played a part in our lives. Beside that, my father, he would take the 3 older sons at that time, but my younger son was so small, they weren't in it. But before we went out to play on Sunday, which wasn't so favorable, we want to be on the football plane more than any other place. But he made us sit down, and we all had to read a chapter together in the Bible. And he knelt in prayer, and we came along as far as our will would let us. So we cannot forget our bringing up at home. It has impressed all of us through all our lives.
Having such a good life at home, why did you decide to come to America?
Well, I came by accident, because my oldest brother gave me the ticket. I hadn't planned to go.
Mm-hmm. so you hadn't thought about it. How did you feel about leaving then? When you...
Oh, it is in every youth to see the world. And if you had relatives to go to, so more the better.
How old were you?
I was 17. And I came here to this city and took in many things. And
tell me first about your trip over.
Well, I came over in Stavanger Fjord.
How did your mother and father feel about you leaving?
Well, my father came and followed us down to the very dock when we left Ålesund on a smaller steamer down to Bergen, where we boarded Stavanger Fjord that was heading right for America. But my father said, the family is growing, but yet diminishing. What he meant to say, and what he did say, was that we're all growing in years and statures, manhood, but we are diminishing because we are leaving our hometown. The nest is being emptied. But I was
your mother,
one of the first ones to leave so far.
How did you feel?
Well, I wasn't sure, so I can't tell, but I know it was tears, you know, saying goodbye. They didn't know when this young man was going to come home or not. But I was here about short 3 years, and I began to ponder life, the experience I had from home, and the pleasure of the crowd. Sometimes I'd get it into here. And I decided that I will seek what the church had impressed on me in younger years. I have now begun to be pondering where I come from, why I'm here, where am I going when I leave this planet. Those things was growing in me, and I didn't find any answer in the common things I was reading. But I found it in the gospel in the year 1924.
We should go back to you coming over first, maybe. How was your trip over?
My trip over was a very, very tough one.
What's the date you left?
I left Norway. Well, it was 2 weeks before. It must have been. Took 2 weeks over? No, 16.
You came when?
Yeah, I must have left Bergen the 16th of November, 16th of October.
Date, the year?
1921. Okay. It took 14 days to get to America because we ran into terrific weather in the Atlantic. And I was sick from the time I left, began to cross the North Sea till I got to New York. Couldn't eat anything. I tried to eat, I'll just go up and feed the crabs. And so I many times wished I would passed out before I got to New York. But as soon as I had landed, half a day or so, I begin to feel that I was mending fast and was happy that I
was. Did you have to go through Ellis Island?
Yes, sure.
How was that?
Oh, Ellis Island, we had to go in there to be disrobed and find out, see, they didn't want any foreign lights in this country. That perhaps was the main thing we went to Ireland for.
Did you come with anyone, or were you by yourself?
All by myself.
And you know the language?
I only knew Norwegian. I didn't know
only Norwegian?
Yeah.
Did you have any experiences going across on the train?
Oh, yes. On the train, we were all tagged up. We had so many tags on our, not only on our suitcase, but on our clothing, numbers. So I hooked up with two other boys, and we, there was going on the West Coast someplace. And when we got to Chicago, we had to change train. We had, I think, 3 hours to wait. And we walked around, we looked, they told us, look at these big towers and be sure that you come back in time for the next train that goes to the Pacific. And we marked ourselves, but we had plenty of time, so we began to walk up and down the big streets and crowded streets. And we just felt that the world was out of step with us. There was no bashfulness or blueness with us, because we felt we were it, and the rest of them that didn't speak our language, they were out, and we were all right. If you want to buy something, all we did, it was right on the sidewalk, bananas, for instance, 3 for a dime. And when we remember what they paid for them in the old country, we all grabbed for bananas. In fact, I lived on bananas from Chicago till I got to Tacoma, because they were so cheap.
I see.
And the taste is so good.
You did get them in Norway, but they were so expensive.
Oh, they're expensive. Mm-hmm. And those days, they had boats like they have Merchant Marine now, but they didn't have the facilities to keep them
mm-hmm.
cooled off.
Mm-hmm.
That's made them expensive.
Mm-hmm. So you ate bananas all the way across. What
yes.
Else? What else happened on the train? Anything?
No. You could buy, maybe I buy a sandwich. You get a sandwich wrapped up in wax paper, you know. I probably took one or two. My main meal was,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Did somebody meet you in Tacoma?
Yes. When I came to Tacoma, oh. I got a happy welcome from my aunt and uncle that lives right here. I had also an aunt and uncle in Oregon, which I didn't see for some time later. And I had aunt and uncle in Eastern Washington.
Were these all your father's brothers?
No, it's my Eastern Washington, my mother's sister, my aunt was my mother's sister.
I see.
Yes, and here in Tacoma, my aunt was my mother's sister.
Mm-hmm.
And in Oregon was my father's sister. So it was
sisters'
relations here, and all of their husbands,
mm-hmm.
of course.
You were greeted by your aunt and uncle, and then what'd you do?
Yes, and I was brought up to their nice home, and began immediately to attend night school to learn something of the language, and then later study civics for citizenship paper. I took out my first paper very early, but waited some time before I took my second paper. That was in Oregon during the Depression years. I didn't take up my second paper.
What do you mean by first paper and second paper?
Well, you had to take your first paper and keep them for, what was it? 3 years after, before you applied for your second. You had to be here 5 years before you got your...
So your first one was kind of a temporary one?
No, it's one that you had to register. They want to know where you come from, and your intention is to become a citizen.
Mm-hmm. And
declaration of intention, I guess
I
it's
see.
Called.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's your intent to become a citizen, that they give you time, but you have to get it within 5 years,
mm-hmm.
or else the first paper is no good. Well, I didn't take him at that time. Whether I had to take him over again, I can't remember. But I got my citizen paper during the Depression years in Oregon.
Okay, now did you get work here in Tacoma?
Yes, I worked the first year. I worked in the bakery with my uncle, which was a baker here in Tacoma.
Oh, what was his name?
Ubi Lien, down on Market Street. And he... proceeded in making partly a baker out of me. But later I found that it was too enclosed for me. I wanted to seek other outside employment. So I went down to the railroad and worked there for some time. It was outside work. I worked as a car knocker. But strike came one year, and it was so long that before a settlement was effected, from my father.
What was a car knocker first?
That's the ones that makes the cars.
Makes the cars.
The railroad cars, yeah. Mm-hmm. You strip the old ones and then clothe the new ones with new top and everything. Mm-hmm. You call them car knockers. It was apprenticed, which I was.
Apprentice and what?
It was a what was the second one?
Well, that's all right. Then you began, you got in a cabinet shop.
Yeah. Cabinet shop, and I worked at that trade ever since.
Was that here in Tacoma?
Yes.
What shop was it? Did you start at?
Well, it was one little shop. I won't mention it because they had such a rotten. At Tacoma Millwork Supply Company, 3000 Center Street. They were doing very fine work and had plenty of it. And I remained there from 1924 to 30, when they shut down entirely because the Depression had come. I then left Tacoma and spent 9 years with another uncle and aunt in Oregon, who had a fruit farm in Looking Glass Valley, which is 10 miles out of Roseburg, Oregon. In those days, it was hard to find work of any kind. He taught me how to prune trees, how to run the tractor, how to milk cows, how to raise turkeys. And I felt quite at home with him. But when World War II broke out, 1939, our factory began to run again here in Tacoma, and I was called back and went back to Tacoma and took my old job, cabinet making, back. I was there 1 year and then was suddenly called into military duty. Which happened to be on Pearl Harbor Day, December 7th, 1941. I had some training, basic training out at Fort Lewis, was then sent down to Fresno, California, for some more training. Then I was sent from there I was now joined. I must say that I, at Fort Lewis, I was joined to the Air Corps as a specialist in woodwork. My business was to repair gliders when they needed repair. So after we had the training, well, now the training is soldiers' training, not training to make this. I had that before. Then I was sent from Fresno over to Louisville, Kentucky for some exercises, and from there to Laurinburg, Maxton Air Base, North Carolina. We were there waiting to be shipped over to Casablanca, and the first convoy that was sent was shot up by the Germans. We lost a spy plane that went out to see how things was gone. She didn't return. And we were told to lay low until they could give us more help. So when they were fixing up the next convoy, which I was a part of, they made a new law in Washington, D.C., that all past 38, which were key men in industry, would be wanted on the home front more than on the war front. So when that law was made, the manager of the plant I worked in here in Tacoma sent a note to the commander, camp commander, where I was located, and said he wanted me back because I was needed in the factory. Wonderful. And you could not leave the camp unless you had a note from your former employee, which I did get. And so instead of going to Casablanca, I went to Washington via Florida, because I had relatives in Florida I wanted to see. I bought a ticket going home in my uniform for 1 cent per mile, 5,000 miles, from North Carolina down to Miami, Florida, and from Florida over to, what is it, on the West Coast way down here, down below Los Angeles.
San Diego,
yeah. Yeah, from then over to San Diego on the West Coast and then up to Tacoma. It was 5,000 miles that I traveled. And when I come back to the shop, I was frozen for a whole year. I could not do anything else but be working in my former employment.
What were you building there that was so important?
We were building at that time the Magic City, which is Fort Lewis. We had 40,000 window frames, 40,000 doors, to mention just some of what our firm had a contract on. And it was all going over to assembly line, and Fort Lewis popped up overnight almost. When year was up, I took off to Canada and went to gospel work for 3 full years.
You know, you were mentioning that after you had been here, is it 3 years?
After
you had been here 3 years, that you began to wonder about...
Yes. I was converted in 1924. I think I mentioned that.
You just said that you began to wonder about where you came from.
Yeah.
And then what was your experience there?
The question of life.
Yes.
Well, I couldn't get that solved in the reading that I was seeking, but I still was seeking. So I went back to the church that I had some knowledge about. Then I found
what
it through
is
the
that?
Church.
What
well,
church?
I didn't mention what church.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Just say the church. That's.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I went first back to Lutheran Church. Olaf Holland was teaching down here,
mm-hmm.
but later I went to the Pentecost. You know.
Yes. Well, tell us about that. You went. Okay. You went to the church, and what did you find there?
Well, that had more meaning to me. They had an answer of these questions that I couldn't find in the secular things I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
They had guesswork about the hereafter. The Bible says in the beginning, God. And it's so specific. You either take it or leave it. Well, I had enough training from home and had seen it in operation in my parents and other Christians that I believed they had the truth. And I accepted that. And was active in the church from the time of my conversion until depression came and I moved to Oregon, as I have just stated. And in Oregon, I was occupied with gospel work. I taught Sunday school in two places on every Sunday, and as much other that I can do that was church-related. But when I come back, I had then desired to go out in full gospel work with the training I already have, given to myself and by God's anointing and spirit, and what I've heard through specific times of teaching in the church. So I left after 1 year was up. That I was obligated to work in the shop. I went with a friend up in Canada, which had been there in gospel work before.
Was this the Pentecostal church?
Yeah. Yeah.
When did you start going to Pentecostal church?
Well, I began probably in 1923. That is, not on the inside. They had tent meetings. We watched it. But it wasn't before. The first, I was baptized in a Baptist church. J.C. Kellogg, the cowboy preacher, was the preacher.
You had been baptized in a Lutheran church, though, hadn't you?
Oh, yeah, but that didn't...
But you didn't feel like that was...
Oh, I didn't know about that. They just told me that.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, that's the best my parents knew to do it.
So you wanted to make a commitment yourself?
Yeah, now when he that believeth in his baptized shall be baptized. That's,
so we
that's
say.
A different story. So I believe now that grown up baptism, after you believe and know what you believe, is the biblical way. So I was baptized in that Baptist church. And he taught healings, and I saw more miracles than I've seen in Pentecost since I got in. He really had faith. He fasted and prayed night and days and prayed for the sick, and he had it up. But when it comes to speaking in tongues, he held that off. You know.
So then did you go to the Pentecost church
yeah,
after that?
Yeah. One of our, how that happened, this is not on us.
Mm-hmm.
Among our young people in this a rather small church.
Baptist church?
Yeah, small Baptist church where we were baptized together was that one of our young girls had gone to a revival meeting down to the Pentecostal church. And she was missing for some time, and we want to find out what's happening to her. Then she told us that she was wonderfully baptized in the Holy Spirit and spake in tongues, which were new to us because it wasn't taught by our minister. So, instead of condemning her and try to pull her away from what she was into, we went along with her to find out for ourselves. And the thing was catchy. It it convinced us that it was of God. We met many that we already knew outside the church. I worked, in fact, with some of them, and I knew they were reliable characters and that they had something that was I really desired to have. A power, an inner power and joy that I felt was superseded what I had experienced. So, we turn out, several of our young people turn out to go to the Pentecostal meetings and wait upon the Lord, and we receive the baptism. That spoiled us for any other meeting. So since then, I have been in Pentecost now for over 50 years.
So then after the war, you decided to go up to Canada and
attend service? Yes, this friend of mine came down from Canada. He said, I think the Lord wants you with me to Canada. And I had been privately praying, not telling anybody, that the Lord will open some way where I could be used more than I am. I was willing to give up my work, my job. I was single and could afford to. If he open a way. And one day at the altar, when he had come down from Canada, he come and laid his hands on me. He said, I think the Lord wants you to go with me to Canada. And I felt, my, this is just an answer to what I have been praying about that he doesn't know anything about. So I took that from the Lord, went with him, and the result was that for 3 years. And had some very dear friends, and spoke in my mother tongue, mostly because they demanded that up there. That's what they wanted up there, because they were mostly immigrants from the old country.
So you were ministering to Norwegians?
Yeah.
Up there?
Yes.
I see.
And at that time, I was so versed in it and using my Norwegian Bible that when I come down here, after World War II, when the war was over, I immediately went to Norway. Because I felt now I was equipped to... Is that for us? No, that must be for the neighbor. So I went to Norway and gave my testimony in my hometown's assembly. And I was shortly after that approached by the brethren about taking the responsibility of pastoring the church while the one that was just temporary there now, the main pastor had left, and the church was in the hands of a temporary vicar. Is that what you would call him?
What church was this?
Assembly. First,
it was assembly.
Yeah, it was a Pentecostal assembly in my hometown. Mm-hmm. So they felt, after they heard my testimony and we've talked together, that and the experience I had over in Canada ministering the Norwegian language, that they wanted me to become their pastor. I thought that was too big a bite, because I come to Norway not to spend so much time. I wanted to see the country and see my relatives and all that. So I lived with my parents in Ålesund, and I wanted to be free if somebody come to town and needed an interpreter from English to Norwegian, which happened quite often in Norway. So many preachers from England come over, and sometimes from America over, and they want interpreters. I said, if that happens, I want to be loose enough from the responsibility here to assist them. And at that time, I can be more familiar with Pentecost in Norway and feel the pulse of how things are here. And they agreed to that. And I got quite a few times opportunity to do that. I had three boys which were called the Graham, Billy Graham Trio. They came to my hometown one time. They were visiting another church, more like the Christian Missionary Alliance. But they didn't have an interpreter. So they called me from the Pentecostal mission to come and be their interpreter. These three boys had been on a submarine during World War II. And now, freedom had come. So they come to Norway. Now, these three men were educated, young men, were educated at Wheaton College, which...
Illinois.
Huh?
In Illinois.
Yeah, in Illinois. At the time they arrived in my hometown for meetings, they were hunting for an interpreter. But at the same time, they were receiving the news that a war was broke out in Korea. And they all had the feeling that they'll soon be called back to the submarine service. So when I met them, they were quite fearful of being called before they even start any meeting. But anyway, they started the meeting here in Olesund, and I had the honor to be their interpreter, all three of them. One was, I forget name him now. One was a trumpeter. He had been an entertainer in a nightclub before his conversion. One was a very good song leader. And the third was the preacher. They all had something to say, and I interpreted. They had to hire the biggest place in Olesund because the crowds wanted to hear these three young men. They were really on fire. And in one incident, they told of a revival that came to Wheaton College when they were there for their studies. And in one meeting, at one testimony meeting lasted 36 hours. And one, the trumpeter stood on the platform for 36 hours and led the meeting without a let up. You should think he'd be sleeping. But they seem all to get new life. New was converted, new miracles happened, and it was a continuous among the students in that college at that time.
Fantastic.
That it was, and I heard of that before I got over to heard of that. But I didn't know I was going to meet these boys, you know. Mm. So that was one of the group that I had the privilege of interpret for. From English into Norwegian. And another one was Dr. Barnes from England, which has a large assembly in London. And he also have a school and a language school for other foreigners that come and want to study English and go to the mission field. I traveled with him up north, in northern Norway. and he had some good meetings. And I think the last one I had was Pastor Offler from Seattle that came over to the World Pentecostal Conference held in France. He came over first to England, which he hadn't seen for 52 years. He was an Englander. And then he was called over to Norway for special meetings starting in Bergen. And I was called to be his interpreter. That was a big Pentecostal tabernacle in the middle of Bergen. And every night the tabernacle was crowded and many people were blessed. And later he came to my hometown, Olesund, and I was with him there. Well, there's many others, but I wouldn't take time to mention that. That's the assembly in Olesund allowed me to take off during these times. But I stayed in Olsen for 3 years before I went back to America. And I married the last year before I left.
Who did you marry?
This girl here.
Tell me her name and who she was.
Yeah. I married one of the nurses in that came to our assembly that I got acquainted with. She was a nurse in Olsen Hospital. She was from Notodden.
Where is that?
Which is in southern Norway, not too far from Oslo. And she had been in Olesund. How many years? She had been in Olesund about 5 years.
Her name was?
Her name was Esther Swanlund, which is now Mrs. Esther Halsen. She came along with me to America. I was quite up in age, never been married, an old bachelor. And she was quite a bit younger, but still up in years as far as hunting and picking. So we were here 12 years before she entered her profession here. Because in 1952, Ruth Halsett was born in Tacoma General Hospital, and in 1954, Marion Halsett was born in the same room, in the same hospital. And in 1962, my wife began to look for a job in her profession.
What are your girls? Are they married?
My youngest girl is not married. She is a switchboard operator and part-time receptionist in Tacoma General Hospital. And the oldest girl is Ruth, born in 1952. She is now Mrs. Stephen Jensen. She went to Seattle Pacific College to study, take up nursing. She was there 2 years, came back to Tacoma, rented a place to live out, which was quite popular among the young people, got a part-time job in Tacoma General Hospital, and later full-time job. But she happened to marry and quit her job. Stephen Jensen.
What does he do?
He is working as a ship fitter down at Tacoma Boat. Yeah, well,
we. So she didn't become a nurse.
No, she dropped the nursing when she got married, and then she wanted to be a receptionist in the doctor's office. She went out to Lakewood. And went to take up a study in Clover Park as a receptionist. She came out with quite good grade. But then she discovered when she made her application that she was pregnant. And our only grandchild so far came along, and she had to give up seeking any outside work. To handle this little fella is a lifetime, is a full job. Well, anyway, here a few months ago, she went to, what is this TG out there? What are you going to call it?
Tacoma General, or Tacoma Community College.
A few months ago, she went to Tacoma Community College to brush up on her chemistry, which she has almost now completed. And in the coming year, she planned to finish her nurse's education at PLU. I don't have to say that, what that stands for, you would know.
Now, did you go back and do cabinet work when you came back from Norway? Or what did you
Yes.
have you been doing?
Yes. When I came back from Norway, I settled down right here in Tacoma. And spiritually, I would be occupied teaching Sunday school class and having charge of the Tacoma Rescue Mission the day of our church. And then I bought a home near the plant where I work, so I wouldn't have to have a car immediately. And as soon as finances rolled in, I bought a car and worked in the plant until I was 68 and a half years old. Then I retired, but having a shop in the basement of my home, when the church group knew that I was retired, they had all kinds of work piled up for me. So I got busy making furniture for the daycare center first, then for the grade school, then for the church proper in many ways, like the operation room of the, they flash all the light. What do you call that room up there? Well, anyway. And then life, I must not forget Life Manor, senior citizen home. I made all the shelving in the and desk in the
office.
Hmm?
No.
What do you call it?
And what had you make in
that? Yeah, well, it's a name on that.
Occupational room?
No. Where you sell stuff.
In the commissary.
Commissary.
In the commissary.
Yes. In the commissary first, then in the library. And spend most of my time now making little things for the family members.
Now, this is Life Assembly you were talking about. This is the church. Have you been active in any Norwegian organizations?
No, I haven't. I have attended Gloria. I have attended this Free Lutheran group, Martin...
Guhagen.
No. Martin Linderud.
Oh.
They meet up in that Gloria Day Church once a month. They have a Norwegian meeting. Mm. They're the only ones that have a Norwegian meeting that I know of in town. Mm. Yeah. They are more of the Free Lutheran type. Yeah. So I have attended his services now and then.
Have you been back to Norway again?
If I've been back to Norway?
Again.
Yes, I went back in 1973.
Just you?
No, my wife and I. Mm-hmm. We spent 5 weeks there.
Now, you've been...
I was due to go this summer, but she went alone. Can you close that off?
Now, did you see any changes when you went back?
To Norway?
Shh. Did you see any changes?
Take it off and let me think a little bit. When we got back to Norway now, in 1973. It happened so that when I retired from Tacoma Millwork Supply Company, or later called Monitor Cabinet, I received two return tickets, one for me and one for my wife, to Norway and back. So we left here in June and spent 5 weeks in Norway. We missed some of our family that we had planned to visit when we got there. My brother Jens, who had the business in Ålesund, passed away around Thanksgiving the year before. And then his wife wrote to us that when we come, we must be sure to visit her in Ålesund before we travel to some other city in Norway. She passed away in May. Just a month before we got there. And then my sister in Kristiansund, which was the minister's wife, and now a widow, and had worked so hard to make our visit so nice. When we came to Oslo, we learned that she had passed away. So three that we really had planned to meet and see were now already passed away. That took something out of our feelings. But otherwise, the other people made up for it. They couldn't show us love and hospitality enough.
What about your home?
When we got there.
How about your home? Was it still standing there? Is your home still there?
Hold on. we spent a week in Trondheim with my youngest brother Olaf, which was a manager of Norsk Brensel or Oil Company and British Petroleum. Then he drove us in his Volvo down to my hometown, Ålesund, where we were invited to stay in the apartment of the twin brother of my brother-in-law, the Lutheran minister. Which we enjoyed very much. From there, we visited many of our friends, our mutual friends in Ålesund, and relatives nearby.
But I was wondering about the changes, not so much in the people as in the town. You know, the house was not there anymore, you said, your old
Well, when I was home the first time in 47, and spent 3 years in the old country. I stayed with my parents, but they lived in an apartment of craftsmen. It's called the craftsman apartment. So they lived in there, and I lived with them there.
But things were more modern then already, were they?
Oh, yes. That was a modern... Mm-hmm. And it was... Well, I could have mentioned that of course that same thing where you go on earth almost
mm-hmm.
you leave for a while and then there's so many new buildings and
yes.
new homes.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. How do you feel about being a Norwegian?
If I had my way and I didn't know what I know about what might happen to the whole Balkan Peninsula, I would prefer to go home and spend the rest of my life there.
Why do you say that?
I say it because I have a fear that Russia will grab the whole peninsula there.
Yeah, but why
Norway, Sweden and all, and I'll be a prisoner in Russia.
Yes, but why would you rather be there if you didn't have that fear?
Well, I have still many friends still living. And all my past relatives are buried there. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't be... many do that, you know.
So it isn't so much the living conditions or the country, it's just that where your past is.
Well, as it is now, the living conditions are much better than it ever was because of have that oil. Mm-hmm. And the senior citizens back there are better off than hardly anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They're not worried about anything because they got total hospital costs paid and they have even visitors that come in their apartments now and do some cleaning up twice a week for them. So they have it real nice.
What do you feel is in your life that you've gotten from being a Norwegian? What is it, your heritage that you feel that you're proud to be a Norwegian?
Well, I love this country too, as far as that goes. But it's more in a miniature scale there than here. It's a smaller, it's like a state in the Union. It's more family-like, has been, until this oil comes. That makes it multi-population from Pakistan and Poland and almost any country move up there for work and jobs. And Norway's quite liberal. They want their own culture, keep that culture with them in Norway, and they kind of destroy Norwegian culture. We think about our culture. We are working more for the culture here in PLU and down in the pavilion and for the Norwegian culture than they are at home. At home, they're losing it. Many people don't like that. And naturally, if I lived there, maybe I wouldn't like it either.
What do you feel that you've done here in your own home, for instance, to maintain the culture?
Well, I haven't really done much to keep the Norwegian culture. My wife cherished the little deals that we get. Now she have her Scandinavian crook out there. If you go and look at it, that's all we have of the old country. She was 33 years old when she come here, and she'd think that she'd be, but she likes it here, never can think. She was home now this summer. She says, I can never think of going back and staying.
Mm-hmm. What about the foods? She cooks the Norwegian food, so doesn't she?
Well, she sure is an expert when it comes to food. You can have almost any food you want to, but I'll show you out here what we have on. What you go and somebody listen to all of what we say. Yeah.
Have you taught the children the Norwegian language?
No. Our children seems to not have the desire to go with us when we go to any place where the Norwegian doings are. It's too monotonous for them. They might understand, but they're not enjoying it. Because I don't belong to any Norwegian fraternity. I have only gone to this gospel meeting that's put on by the independent Lutherans up in the Gloria Dei. And I go to the Christmas service now. Pretty soon they will have one for the church, and one for each one of these groups. And then, of course,
your church has been more important to you, hasn't it, then?
Yes, I'll say that now.
Then, okay.
Is it going on now? When I first came here, my Uncle Nent had me join the Norwegian Singing Society. I was with him for a while. But when I got converted in 1924, I became so occupied with the church and spiritual things that I dropped completely out from any contact with Norman Hall and the singing society which I belonged to. I was even with the society when we sang, and they laid the cornerstone for Norman Hall. And had many friends there, but the newfound friends now among the Christians occupied my time, so I have ever been among the Pentecostal group and served in jail services, street meetings, and finally full-time in Canada and Norway in gospel work.
How about the church in Norway? I've heard so many times that the Lutheran church, the state church, is really, really dead now.
Well, they are losing their whole of the people. More and more are dropping out. And they are, for the most part, lacking spiritual life for the hungry. So what they call dissenters in the old country, that's anybody outside the state church, they are growing while the state church is diminishing. And some of their own claim that there'll soon be no state church in Norway. Time will have to show. I don't know if I should tell you anymore.
You have something else you'd like to share? Can you share a...
As I say, I wouldn't mention anything about that.
Can you share a prayer or something in Norwegian? Can you say something in Norwegian to end the day?
Ja, jeg er så takknemlig til Gud for den familien som jeg var født inn til, og for den oppdragelse som jeg fikk I mitt hjem. Og siden jeg kom her til Amerika og fant så mange vennlige slektinger, så må jeg si at jeg har hatt det bare godt siden jeg kom hit. Og... Nå når jeg kommer opp I grå hår og skal snart bli 78 I min neste giversdag, så føler jeg at jeg har meg til å takke Gud for. Han har gitt meg meg en styrke, så I stedet å føle som en gammel mann, så har jeg... Godt mot, god helse, og med god sikt for fremtiden. Når det blir trangt nok her på jord, så vet vi at det en åpen himmel for dem som tror på Gud. Så mange takk for besøket her.